case, Dillard versus CTA, Mr. Platt.
May it please the court, Stephen Platt on behalf of the plaintiff and the appellant, Mr. John Dillard. This is an appeal in a Title VII case in which summary judgment was granted below. Judge Gottschall indicated in her opinion that there was no evidence to support the plaintiff's case, despite the fact that the plaintiff pointed out that he was denied 16 promotions and 17 salary grade increases, and despite the fact that there was a 79-paragraph request to admit submitted by the plaintiff, much of which was denied by the defendant. The essence of the case boils down to the basic issue in the case is that the we've argued that there were promotional denials and salary increase denials. White individuals were given these positions in every instance. The defendant has come back and said that only two promotions were within the time period and there's no continuing violation. But we indicated below, as we've indicated here, that there are two ways in which the other acts of discrimination can be included. One is the continuing violation theory. And the other, as we argued unsuccessfully to Judge Gottschall below, is Rule 401, Rules of Evidence, in which it says that evidence is presumed to be admissible unless it is unfairly prejudicial, with an emphasis on the word unfair, which comes under Rule 403. What Judge Gottschall essentially did is she ignored all of this evidence in saying that there was no evidence, and she did not deal with the 401 issue. In essence, what she did is she adopted, without saying so, she adopted a rule that says that any prior act of discrimination, if it tends to show a pattern, is inadmissible. She didn't actually make that ruling, but that's the essence of her ruling because she ignored the 401 argument. And our position is that when you have a situation where every single position that an individual applies for, every merit increase that they seek, every time that there is an increase in grades for people within his department goes to white people or he's denied that at some point it starts to establish a pattern. For example, as we pointed out to the court, at one point in 1998, there were six people in December within the department promoted to the position of a grade 216. Mr. Dillard was a 214. All the 216 people that were promoted, none of which were African Americans. Four of them were whites, two of them were Hispanics. One of the white individuals, Mr. Frank Fisher, was promoted again 1 year later to a grade 217. And that's where Mr. Dillard got stuck. He got stuck in the grade 214 range and was not permitted to advance beyond that at any point in his career. In addition, once he started complaining to the individuals above him about the fact that he had been discriminated against, L.S. Kendrick...
Well, he hasn't been working for the CTA for very long, and I was unclear whether about the relevance of his previous experience to the jobs he was seeking.
That's a fair point, Your Honor. He was hired by the CTA in 1990. He was a graduate of Alabama A&M with a degree in electrical engineering. He served in the Navy during the Vietnam War.
Yeah, I know, but what does the Navy have to do with the CTA, right? CTA has no boats.
Well, he had the engineering background, which he used then.
Well, look, engineering is a huge field, right?
Yes.
So what are his? What did he do that had to do with? What do they have, buses and trains? Did he have any experience in automotive engineering?
He had experience at Lytton Jefferson from 1968 to 1979 in Transformers, where he won Engineer of the Year Award.
He Transformers also for what?
Electrical transformers for...
Well, in what? In electric plants or what?
Your Honor,
well, are they relevant to the CTA? Buses don't have...
Transformers? I don't know about...
The positions, the CTA makes the argument that it's related simply to automobiles, to buses. However, the positions, if you look at them specifically, they do not deal with buses and that kind of information. For example, one of the positions was manager of vendor performance in the material and information management department. That's exactly what he was doing.
Well, vendor performance? But that must be people selling...
It was contractors.
Buses and parts and so on?
It was contractors who did business of all sorts.
I mean, all sorts. It would be all related to buses, wouldn't it? Or trains. I don't know much about that.
I don't believe the record supports that statement. I know that the argument was made by the CTA. But the positions that he was in dealt with dealing with contractors who worked with the CTA. These were management positions where he was dealing with contractors. They weren't necessarily, I think the argument that they made is, number one, he didn't know enough about buses and how buses worked. And secondly, that he didn't know about budgets. Well, the budget argument is not supported by the record, because he was dealing with budgets in terms of the vendor positions that he had, the general manager positions that he had. He was dealing with purchasing, he was dealing with the vendor performance, he was dealing with contract issues. He dealt with oversight. He also had experience in his own business where he was a consultant when in the company of Dillard Crowley.
What was he consulting on?
Consulting in the area of chloride industrial batteries and transformers. Chloride industrial batteries have to do with, I guess, the industry. I don't know if it deals with buses or not. I think that the issue about buses is actually a red herring. If we were talking about one position, for example, if it was only one position that we're dealing with, as opposed to 17 or 16.
Are the buses and the subway, are they in different divisions in the CTA or what?
Mr. Dillard was in the vendor section. That's the section that he worked in, and those were the places where he was seeking promotions. So he sought promotions within his own unit.
Does that include both the trains and the buses or what?
I only know about the vendor position and the oversight from contractor, because that's the section that he was in, oversight of contractors and vendors. That was the purchasing section of the vendor.
It would be essential in a case like this to show that the person has relevant experience, because the people who were, I gather, who were promoted over him were people who had, were specialists in automotive engineering. Now, maybe that's not the only thing that's important in the CTA, but isn't it something you should have explored more?
Your Honor, I don't believe that the record supports that, except with respect. I think there was one individual, Mr. Kurtovich, who was identified in which they talked about the budgetary process and understanding bus operations. That's the only person I saw on the record and in their brief where they identified that kind of qualification. All other individuals had less seniority at the CTA and didn't have the same engineering background that my client had. So, and furthermore, if we're just talking about one or two positions, that's one thing. But when you start to get to the point where you've got 16 positions over a short period of time and the person is frozen within one position at 214, at what point does it start to become a pattern? You can say that you can argue specifically as to each one of these individual positions. I think that Your Honor addressed it in one of the cases you talked about disaggregating the aggregate or something to that effect, about balkanizing the evidence and taking individual pieces and separating them out. That's what the defense has actually done here. They're taking one individual position and saying, well, this one doesn't work, and they take another position and say, that one doesn't work. And our point is that you can't look at it piecemeal. You have to look at the overall picture. And within the overall scheme of things, you have a man that is frozen in a grade 214 from 1994 and beyond, and he's denied 16 separate specific positions and 17 merit increases. At some point during that time period, that evidence becomes compelling. And we are talking, remember,
I see how the number of turndowns can be significant. But that would just suggest a strategy in which if you're turned down for one job and you want to bring a lawsuit, you apply for every other job in sight in order to be able to make an argument that you must be a victim of discrimination if you were turned down 16 times in a row.
Your Honor, I suppose if we were cynical about these cases, I think you could make that argument. However, I prefer not to be cynical in this instance, and I'd like to remind the Court that we're talking here not about a trial, we're talking about summary judgment. And we're talking about an instance in which the trial judge said there was no evidence. There was a lot of evidence, and the inferences should have been raised in relation to in favor of the plaintiff, and should not have been presumed the other way, which is essentially what Judge Gottschall did.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Platt. Ms. Patel?
May it please the Court, my name is Michelle Patel. I represent the Chicago Transit Authority, the defendant appellee in this matter. summary judgment in favor of the CTA should be affirmed because the appellant, Mr. Dillard, has not established a material issue of fact to support his claims of retaliation and discrimination. Mr. Dillard was hired by the CTA in 1990. Within 10 years, he more than doubled his salary as he was promoted up a total of 5 salary grades. So right off the bat, you can see that the record shows that Dillard was consistently promoted throughout the relevant time period. His last promotion was in 1998, so plaintiff's counsel's contention that he was turned down for every single promotion is just not supported in the record. By the middle of 1994, Dillard had already reached the ranks of management after he was promoted to the position of manager vendor performance. After that promotion, Dillard received yet another promotion higher into the ranks of management when he received the position of manager contract vendor oversight in March of 1998. And that was a level 215 position, and that's where he remains today. So, again, plaintiff's counsel's contention that the plaintiff was mired in a level 214 is incorrect. He's at now at level 215.
How many levels? What's the highest top level?
You know, I don't know. The highest level that's in the record, this case, I believe, is a 217. I think it probably goes higher than that, but I'm not sure. As might be expected given CTA's hierarchical management structure, the frequency of Dillard's promotions tapered off as he moved up in the ranks at CTA. The positions in the higher ranks of management that Dillard sought had very specific requirements and experience, and the individuals who met those requirements were promoted. The fact that Dillard not...
Well, Mr. Platt said that only one of these people had actual... greater relevant experience than Dillard.
That's not true. If you look at Dillard's timely failure to promote claim, there's 5. Two of those positions, it's clear, it's undisputed in the record, that Dillard did not even have the minimum requirements necessary to get hired into that position. First, with respect to the manager administrative services position that he sought, it's undisputed that that position required real estate management experience, which Dillard didn't have. The person that was promoted did have that experience. It's also undisputed that Dillard lacked automotive engineering experience, which was required for the general manager engineering and technical services promotion. Again, Thomas Kohler, the person that was promoted into that position, did have the required experience. Also, when you talk about John Kurtovich, who was promoted to general manager quality assurance, Mr. Trotta, the vice president who promoted Kurtovich, found that he was more qualified for Dillard because he had been at the CTA since 1984 and had experience specifically in the CTA's bus heavy maintenance and capital grants department.
Does the CTA just have buses? Does it have trains? Or
yeah, it has bus and rail.
And are those under similar management, or do they have two different...
With respect to the overall management of the services themselves, there's separate management. With respect to oversight of materials, that would be a single entity that would do purchases.
So with his vendor position, he would have been buying both for the rail side and the bus side.
I believe that's correct, although that's not, you know, there's nothing really like that in the record. I did also want to clarify that at Litton, Dillard had experience setting standards for transformers, but those transformers were for submarines. Okay, so really the majority of Dillard's professional life before he came to the CTA, there was very little technical experience. I think that was probably the first at Litton, I think, was the last time he had a technical hands-on engineering position. After that, he was mostly in sales for different things, such as batteries, and when he went over and started his own consulting business, that was consulting and materials handling. You know, there's no evidence in the record exactly what they entailed. There's no connection between whatever experience he might have had there with any of the positions at issue. In addition, with respect to the two remaining failure to promote claims, We did not even get to Dillard's comparative qualifications because Dillard either did not apply for the position or he withdrew his application, and that's with respect to the lead manager receiving a management promotion. He refused a total of 2 opportunities to interview for that position, and that's the reason why he wasn't considered. And he did not bother to make sure he followed the required procedures for applying for the manager specification engineering and inspection position, even though those procedures were clearly stated in the posting. And it's undisputed that Dillard saw the posting and that Dillard had followed similar procedures in the past when he responded to other postings. With respect to Dillard's retaliation claims based on the working conditions at the CTA, Dillard makes a number of complaints related to his transfer of his department to a new facility, and his complaints range from a lack of carpeting in his office to being required to sign in and out for lunch. However, Dillard's complaints are merely things that bothered him, and they do not rise to the level of being adverse employment actions that resulted in a quantitative or qualitative change in his employment. Nor has Dillard established the CTA's explanation for the move, that Krutovich wanted everybody working under him in the same place, was merely pretext for discrimination. Now I'd like to talk about the numerous contentions that Mr. Dillard makes, including the alleged 16 times he has passed over for promotions. Rather than addressing the deficiencies in his timely retaliation and discrimination claims, and for the reasons that I just stated, he failed to make out a prima facie case with respect to all of those, Dillard makes a number of unrelated and, in some cases, unsupported assertions concerning other promotions, his salary compared to others at CTA, and the representation of African Americans in management at CTA. However, these background facts, regardless of whether they're probative or supported in the record, do not remedy the basic deficiencies in his claims. He has not made a prima facie case. They cannot establish that he was more qualified for the promotions at issue, or that he applied for all the promotions, and they do not show that the working conditions that are a basis for his retaliation claims constituted adverse employment actions. The background facts also should not be considered for a number of reasons, and I'm going to skip to the alleged 16 promotions because that was highlighted by counsel in his brief. For most of these promotions, and it's not clear in his brief actually which ones he's saying count as the 16, I think some of the ones that are the basis for his timely claims count as a 16. So that's 5. With respect to the remaining 11, he merely lists the number of people in his department that were promoted at some point to a level 216 or higher that happened to be non-African Americans. He doesn't give us any information about the required experience for those promotions, the qualifications of the individuals who were promoted, whether Dillard would have been qualified for those promotions, whether Dillard applied or expressed interest or had an opportunity to apply for the promotions, who was the decision maker with respect to those promotions, and whether it was the same decision maker that was involved in the timely promotions at issue. So therefore, a mere listing of other promotions that Dillard may have or could have had has absolutely no relevance to his timely claims and cannot serve as a basis for him to establish either pretext or a prima facie case at this point. Many of the employees listed by Dillard as being promoted over him do not even work under the same general manager, and therefore were not similarly situated to Dillard. With respect to the time-barred acts, the alleged actions that occurred outside the statute of limitations, in this case, under Morgan, those acts should not be considered on summary judgment. The time-barred acts are discrete acts under Morgan. Dillard has waived any arguments that they constitute part of a continuing violation because he stated several times in his opening brief that a continuing violation was not his point at all. Dillard's evidentiary argument that the time-barred acts are admissible under Federal Rule of Evidence 401 to show motive or severity of conduct is merely an attempt to circumvent Morgan. And Morgan, the Supreme Court specifically found that timely acts within the statute of limitations, even if related to untimely discrete acts, must be independently discriminatory. This means that plaintiffs could not rely on acts outside the statute of limitations to survive summary judgment. And I just want to mention very quickly Dillard's claims with respect to the representation of African Americans. Sorry, my time is up.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Patel. Mr. Platt, how much time did you have? 1 minute?
Very quickly, I'd like to point just in response. Number one, as we pointed out in our brief, counsel said that, you know, in terms of the evidence of who did or did not have the promotional opportunities in African Americans versus whites. As we noted in our brief, there were not, by the time the plaintiff filed his charge in 2000, there were 9 people within his department who had less seniority than him that had higher salaries than he did. Secondly, there is nothing in the record that shows that anybody who was African American was in a manager position higher than a grade 215. And counsel was correct, I misspoke when I said 214. 215 was his highest grade level. He went from a 213 when he was hired, or the equivalent of a 213, to a 215, and that's where he stuck. Number three.
How many people are there above that?
Pardon me?
How many people are there above 215?
We identified at least 7 that I can think of in the record that we identified that were promoted over him beyond the 215. 6 of them were promoted in December of 98, and one was promoted, another white male was promoted to 217 after that. And the senior manager.
Are you saying there are no black people in the higher management of the PTA?
There are no blacks that were identified anywhere in the record that are higher than a 215. I'm certain.
What do you mean by identified?
There are no black individuals who are in a management position that came up in this department that we were able to identify or anybody else was able to identify that was higher than a 215, which was part of what the plaintiff's argument
was. Well, how many are there above 215?
At least 7 that I can think of, plus 2 additional managers, Mr. Trotta, Mr. Kurtovich, so it would be a total of 9.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Platt. Next case for argument is...